I think you should do the entire show in a British accent.
You don't listen to Comedy Film Nerds, do you?
No.
Podcast. It's Graham Elwood and Chris Mancini. And a few years ago, Graham Elwood would just break into... It was an ongoing joke that, like, his, like, he'd go into, like, "Hello, governor!" And, like, it was just an ongoing thing about how bad his accents are. Like, he would say, like, "Oh, my Chinese accent. Good day, governor!" Like, and it was just, like, he would do the wrong... And then they had, like, a donation thing to where you can... He'll either do a full episode with the accent or not. And you had to donate money, and whichever side got the most money was what would happen. It was either never do accents again or do a whole episode in accent. And the accent episode won, and I couldn't even listen to it because it was so fucking painful. Like,
well, so you just have to do better than that. And I would totally do it with you. I'd be right there. Team Unity. But I got a head cold, and it's not going to sound right.
Yeah. Hello, wankers. This is Movies On Up. On air. Under siege. Out of chat. We are Movies On Up. I am Dave, joined by my queen to my Prince Charles. I don't know.
I was
Ryan.
Thinking I'm like the Scotland to your England.
Okay, that works.
Yes.
The Scotland to my England. Ryan. We are Movies On Up. Tagline this week, on air, under siege, out of chat. If you know what movie that's from, email us, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or Twitter, @moviesonup. There's consistency there. They're all Movies On Up. If you are right and we pick you, you are the big winner of the grand royal Movies On Up prize package.
Hopefully you're not English, because we have enough trouble sending these out to people that live in America.
Oh, they've been mailed out. They're good to go.
If you're
all
not
American
ones
are good to go.
Then we really...
They are in the mail through the British Airways. Is that a postal service or an airline?
No, that's the airliner.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And that's why they haven't arrived
yet. I think it's
yet.
Like
I'll
the Royal Parcel Service or something. I don't know. It's socialist.
A movie that made my top 10 of last year, called Alan Partridge, Alpha Papa, is getting a United States release this week, I think.
Sure.
Is probably
you
why
liked
we
that
decided.
Movie a lot.
I did like that movie a lot. You enjoyed that movie.
I liked it as well.
Yeah, so it's getting a theatrical run in the States, a limited theatrical run. So
across
we thought,
the pond, yeah. As those people would say.
Yeah, so we thought, what better way to celebrate a movie that we both enjoyed getting a theatrical release than our favorite English comedies, Wankers.
Indeed. Wankers is a British slang term for penis.
Yeah. I actually didn't come up with this list idea. This was all Ryan, which it's a 100% me list, because I had to narrow this down from, like, no research on this. This
all
was
of them
just,
ever, too.
This was just, like, I came up with about 20 off the top of my head that I wanted to be on the list. I tried to eliminate some. So I'm interested to see yours, where you come from, and there will be no crossover, because if you do come
you'll
up with one,
knock it out. Sure.
I'll just replace it. So I'm good to go like that. And we'll talk more about it, but British comedies, something about them just appeals to me, because they can get away with a lot more. Not that they can get away with it, they have the balls to try it, which is why if you look at a lot of TV shows that are huge successes over there and then come here and they just fail.
Like The Office.
The Office is really the only example I can
I'm
think of.
I'm just a contrarian.
Or
a twat, as the English
might like
say.
Something like Coupling, which that's a little risque. The IT Crowd, like stuff like that just rarely works here because we're kind of dumb, I guess. Our mass audience is silly. But enough
about...
Our
mass audience likes the Duck Fellas.
Yeah. No Duck Dynasty will show up in our five favorite British comedies. Ryan, I have never been more excited to hear one of your lists than I am today. So what is your fifth favorite British comedy?
I am almost certain that you're going to hate my list. And I think I almost did it because I knew you would hate it. And maybe I just want to rain on your parade. But my fifth favorite English comedy of all time is a movie from 1967 directed by a bunch of dudes. So I'm just not going to mention them, but I am going to mention the stars because they're people that you probably have heard of before. Peter Sellers, Orson Welles, Woody Allen. It's 1967's Casino Royale. As much as we love Ricky Gervais or Simon Pegg now, Peter Sellers was that dude in the 60s. much more of a physical comedian than Gervais, a little bit closer to Pegg in that respect, but a great performer nonetheless. It is no secret on this podcast that I love me some James Bond, and this one is a James Bond movie, but way kind of out there on its own. It came out actually 5 years after Dr. No, so the James Bond movies were in their, really their heyday. And then you have this one, which is a tale about a washed-up James Bond that comes out of retirement with a plan that is chock-full of British tomfoolery. Mistaken identities abound. I think Americans have this idea, some Americans have this idea of British comedy as being one thing. This is British comedy. And it's not. Casino Royale is an example of one of the traits of British comedies, and that's they can be very zany at times. And this movie is that. It's very zany. He's got a bunch of secret agents that are all pretending to be James Bond, but they're not all dudes. It's wacky. Peter Sellers is tremendous, and I love me some James Bond. So that's my fifth favorite English comedy.
Wes Anderson in an interview recently talked about, somebody just threw out like, oh, what if you were going to direct a James Bond movie? And I'm pretty sure it was Wes Anderson. I could be wrong on this quote, but his idea was just like James Bond when there's no work, like when there's nothing left, like he goes to see M and she's on the phone and just kind of gives him the like, wait a minute. And so it just kind of him in, which is, I would see a, maybe not a James Bond movie like that, but I'd like to see Wes Anderson make that movie about a spy. And this was kind of like that. I mean, it was
M's
a
dead.
James Bond movie. Yeah. Yeah. So
other than that.
My number five, I tried to, I mean, until we get to number one, I went with an obvious one, but I tried to go with more out there ones. Well, my one and two are kind of obvious, but up to then I tried to go with more maybe overlooked ones. In 2005, this one wasn't so much overlooked. It got a lot of praise. It is directed by Julien Gerald, based on the play, or there was a play based on it, one or the other. It's Kiki Boots, starring a very not muscular Joel Edgerton and an amazing Chiwetel Ejiofor. Fantastic movie, based on a true story where Joel Edgerton is unexpectedly taking over his father's shoe company that is losing a lot of money. Step in Chiwetel Ejiofor as the outspoken drag queen that realizes, hey, you should make shoes for drag queens because there aren't really any good options. You should make male women's shoes. And they do. And it's just a small town. It's Chiwetel Ejiofor as a cross-dressing man and how a small town reacts to him and, you know, how the family reacts to him taking the family business and turning it into something of a farce is what they look at. But it's a really good movie. And I love Edgerton. And this is Edgerton like you don't see him now because he's that rough guy now. This isn't so much that. And this is Chiwetel Ejiofor in an amazing role. Like he's – every time I mention him, I say if you don't believe Ejiofor can act, watch this movie. Kiki Boots is one of those. Like he's a phenomenal actor and – he does so many different roles, and Kiki Boots, he's so good. And it's really funny, and it's an out-there premise, but based on true story, so there's that reality, that feel to it, and it's got a ton of heart. And that's one thing the British do very, very well, is that their comedy that can come off kind of slapsticky can also still be loaded with a lot of heart. And I think this and Full Monty, I think, are two really, really good examples of that. The premise is kind of a slapstick thing, but it's completely driven by heart.
As much as you love Joel Edgerton, I think the British love cross-dressing. That's another one of the colors in their comedy wheel is cross-dressing, and I'm certain that that'll come up later.
Yeah, but I like that this wasn't – Chiwetel Ejiofor's character wasn't cross-dressed for the sake of having a man dressed as a woman. That was just his character.
Sure.
And I liked it. I like that it addressed that, and I like that it was, you know, you got to know him, and he wasn't just a guy dressed as a woman. Like, you really got to know Ejiofor's character, and it's a really good character study. Really liked everything about it.
And as much as you like Chiwetel Ejiofor, it might come out that I like Peter Sellers. My number four, starring the aforementioned Sellers. Again, as well as Slim Pickens, George C. Scott, and Sterling Hayden, directed by a guy who's not really known to be a comedic director, but really whatever genre he dabbled in, he did it pretty well. And he took a stab at a really, really dark comedy in 1964's Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. That director, of course, Stanley Kubrick. Like I said, there's that Sellers guy again. This time, he's back in what is my favorite example of sort of that dry, dark humor that I really appreciate the British sense of humor for. Maybe I shouldn't appreciate it so much. We talked at the top of the show how Americans are kind of dumb and we don't get it. And in this movie, Americans definitely don't get the best of representations. We're pretty much depicted as a bunch of dumb cowboys, but it still makes me laugh nonetheless. Look no further than Slim Pickens in this movie. You mentioned having the balls to do something, and you have a time when world destruction by way of atomic bomb was a distinct possibility for some people, an almost unavoidable likelihood for some other folks. And to be able to make light of that situation really does take a set of cojones. And this is just exhibit two of how awesome Peter Sellers is. He plays three roles in this movie, including, of course, Dr. Strangelove, who is one of the weirdest movie characters that I can remember. But I love this movie. It's full of one-liners that if you're not paying attention to, you're going to miss. One of my favorites in movie history, there's an argument in what is called the war room, and the guy just goes, there's no fighting in here. This is the war room. And it's brilliant. But it's one of those lines that if you're not paying attention, you're going to miss. And I think sometimes when we're expecting dick and fart jokes or slapstick comedy, we miss that sort of thing. And maybe that's why Americans don't like the British as much, because their humor sometimes, not all the time, sometimes is a bit more subtle. It's very subtle in Dr. Strangelove, but it's definitely there.
And from a comedy about an atomic bomb that's somewhat subtle, back on my point about the British are more willing to try something that maybe won't be picked up by American audiences, that's the case with 2010's Four Lions, written and directed by Christopher Morris. If you're an American and you go to one of the American studios and say, I have a great idea for a comedy, it's about four terrorists and them bumbling attempts at becoming terrorists, that's not going to fly. That's what Four Lions is. It's about four British jihadists and them training and trying to plan a major act of terrorism. It doesn't sound like the setup for a comedy, but they're such idiots and they're so incompetent that it is. And it's still got a little bit of a heart, and it's still, yeah, at the end, you're still kind of rooting for jihadists, even though their intentions are terrible, just because it does give you a look into, you know, how it's all beliefs and it's just people believe different things. And trying to duct tape a bomb to a bird, something about that's funny to me. And it just, the dialogue's witty, and it's a nice mix of very dialogue-driven jokes plus just slapsticky kind of situations all around terrorists, which I think is a very ballsy movie to have made. And they pulled it off because it's a good movie that's damned hilarious.
I'm very glad that you put this on the list, because I feel like we've just probably increased our listening audience tenfold. The entire CIA is now listening, Homeland Security, the whole nine yards. That's Dave. That's his list about the murdering jihadists. I don't roll that way. My number three is a family movie, a good movie about two young gentlemen, coming of age story. I don't know that it's necessarily a laugh out loud comedy, but there are some parts in it. I mean, I think this movie's more cute than funny, but it does have its laughs, and I love it. It's English, so anytime I get a chance to mention 2007 Son of Rambo, damn it, I'm going to do just that. Directed by Garth Jennings, starring Bill Milner and Will Poulter. Like I said, it's more cute than outright funny, but it's definitely a movie that if you haven't seen it, if I haven't convinced you to see it, to take a look at it, you definitely should. I checked it out kind of just on a whim just the idea of two kids messing around in the backyard with a video camera trying to make a sequel to Rambo and doing it all themselves, I think is a cute idea. And I was in. Whatever happened from then on out, I just remembered myself as a kid trying to recreate a bunch of scenes from Star Wars or Indiana Jones. I guess I just didn't have the creativity to try and come up with. And I guess I should have. I mean, for goodness sake, I could have made episodes 1 through 3, or I could have come back and did 7 through 9, and I could have, oh man, if I'd have just had that sort of foresight.
This one was actually on my list of also-rans, because this one was one of came to mind too, and it's another one that, yeah, maybe it's not the most laugh-out-loud funny, but it's definitely got its moments, and it's loaded with heart. Like, just yeah. the end and all that, I mean, you see character growth, and it's driven by these kid actors that do very well. And Will Poulter actually showed up last year in We're the Millers, and he stole the show. It was actually a very competent comedy that I enjoyed, and you could tell that guy has, like, chops. Like, he's good for comedies, and I hope he gets a lot more work, because he was really good in both of these movies. And very, very just heartwarming, cute, fun movie. I feel like it kind of got... We talk a lot about movies coming out close to each other. I feel like this didn't really get introduced into the American mainstream. A lot of it because it came out around the same time as Be Kind Rewind, which was a more American take on...
I mean, it's Jack Black.
Yeah, it was Jack Black at the peak of Jack Black and about two dudes remaking movies, so...
And I loved that, too.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good movie. They're both good movies. I think I prefer Son of Rambo... of the two, but I feel like that's maybe why it didn't get picked up as much.
But Garth Jennings, I mean, that's another guy that I'd like to see do more stuff. He did the Hitchhikers movie, which it was a tough thing to try and adapt. And I think he did a serviceable job on that. And I loved this movie. I think I don't know if he wrote it as well, but I had no expectations going into it, and I loved it. I thought it was really cute. Check it out.
Yeah, it was a really good movie. My number three, we talked about the whole reason this list exists is because of Alan Partridge, Alpha Papa, releasing this, which I think in the States it's only being released as the Alan Partridge movie or something like that. Basically, Alan Partridge is a character Steve Coogan has played for 2 decades over there. He's just a hilariously not self-aware DJ, which a lot of the best British characters are just lack self-awareness. David Brent, to be specific. But he also has other great comedies. In 2010, The Trip is my number three. And you want to talk about just a simple concept for a movie. The Trip is just Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon driving along and eating at different restaurants. That's basically the concept of it. Is Steve Coogan's been asked to tour the country and to some of the finest eateries. He looks at it as a perfect opportunity for him and his girlfriend until she bails. And the only person he can take with him is his annoying best friend. And, yeah, it is a movie of just these two guys talking and these two guys sitting at different restaurants having conversations. But these two guys are so good, especially Coogan. Coogan is just so naturally funny. And it bums me out that he, you know, like, he had his shot here with Hamlet 2, like, was his American mainstream, like, starring vehicle that kind of didn't go that well.
Comedy, I mean, he did okay with Philomena, I don't think people are going to associate him.
Yeah. Yeah, but like, he's so funny, and for 2 decades, he's been one of the funniest people on the planet, and I just feel like his name isn't as recognizable. Maybe more so now, because he did find success with Philomena, but when you think great comic like actors and minds, like Steve Coogan may not be one of the first ones to come to mind when it absolutely should. And something like The Trip is a perfect example because it's such a simple concept that's so worth watching that there's a sequel coming out. Like, this was, it's just two guys sitting down eating and talking, but it was so good they're making a second one. And I can't wait to see it just because I love Steve Coogan and he's so good in this. And I could have done a top 5 Steve Coogan movies if I wanted. I could. I don't think you could, but
No.
I absolutely adore Steve Coogan, and this is Steve Coogan at his Cooganiest because he actually is kind of playing himself. So The Trip is just so funny and just very, very good.
My number two, not a long trip from the comedic mind of Steve Coogan being one of the most respected maybe in England for the past 20 years. When you think of comedic minds in England, I don't think you look too much farther than Chapman, Cleese, Gilliam, Idle, Jones, Palin, perhaps better known as the folks from Monty Python. I kind of went back and forth on this one. I stuck with the 1979 joint Life of Brian for a couple reasons. As much as, you know, you've mentioned you were kind of shaped by the state as a youngster, for me, it was the Monty Python guys. In high school, I had a book that had pretty much all the scripts from the TV sketches. And when my partner and I did a speech, we did speech and debate, we just kind of Frankensteined a couple of the Monty Python speeches together. And that was a great room when you had these two talking about teenage rape and these other two about a pregnant cheerleader. Me and my buddy would get up and talk about a dead bird. I loved it. I thought that shit was so hilarious. As a 15, 16-year-old, especially at the time, you know, that's right around American Pie when sort of the raunchy comedies were really starting to become all the rage. And I was looking back at Monty Python and the Flying Circus, looking at guys cross-dressing and having jokes that were almost semantical in the way they were put together. When I think of English humor, these guys are the first guys I think of. It can be dry at times, zany at other times, and we can argue which of the Python flicks is the funniest. But for me, Life of Brian, just on the premise alone, it's kind of the best. It's the story about the guy who was born next to Jesus, Brian. Again, there's a mistaken identity where he's mistaken for Jesus, and that's not necessarily a good thing because they're trying to kill him. To me, that's pure comedy gold. It does manage to take a couple swipes at Christianity without being disrespectful. Maybe a more tactful version of what will be my number one movie, but I do love me some Life of Brian. I love me Monty Python in general. Yeah, Life of Brian.
I love Monty Python. I left them off because I thought they would be easy ones for you to put on there, because any of theirs could go on there. I mean, any Monty Python movie could go on there. And yeah, the state.
Thanks for making it easy for me, Dave. I appreciate that.
The state and Mr. Show, like, shaped my comedy, and it was my light, like my sense of humor. And it wasn't until after I had developed that sense of humor from them that I was able to go back and appreciate Monty Python. And the dead bird sketch is, you know, one of the greatest. When I think of greatest sketches of all time, you know, I have the audition from Mr. Show, I have Goodbye Mailbox from The State, and then the dead bird from Monty Python. Like, those are my favorite sketches ever. People now, like young kids now that are comedy nerds, know Monty Python, and they're timeless. Like, they're still funny. Everything they did is still relevant.
Dead Parrots is funny today as it was 30 years ago.
They're still relevant. This is the part of the list where Ryan gets mad because I start going a little bit more obvious. Last week we did an episode because Wolf of Wall Street came out, and that was Ryan's favorite movie of 2013. One of my favorite movies of 2013 was a British comedy. And when I think about British comedies and comedies in general, few have made me laugh as consistently for as long as I Give It a Year did, starring Rafe Spall, Rose Byrne, Stephen Merchant, The Mentalist, Anna Faris. Yeah, it's a romantic comedy, but it epitomizes what I love about that awkward British humor, the stuff that Gervais and especially Merchant have made a career on.
And Merchant is perfect.
Merchant's perfect in this, and it's nice that, like, it was a big year for him last year because he was perfect in this, and then Hello, Ladies. His show on HBO, I absolutely adored, which was brilliant. But I Give It a Year, it was so good, because you have Rafe Spall, who maybe not your typical leading man, but he was the perfect leading man in this movie. You have Rose Byrne, who I adore in everything, and Anna Faris, who was very, for being a comedy, very subdued, not very Anna Faris-y. Like,
she wasn't like the American version of Anna Faris.
Yeah, and then it everything worked together, and the situations. We talked about other stuff where they can mix dialogue and gags and, like, physical gags. This had it all. I've mentioned it before on the show, but the digital picture frame scene, that whole scene is maybe 4 or 5 minutes long, but I laughed the whole time. Even,
and it's what you see it in the trailer, so you know
but
it's coming.
But they still managed to make it just funny nonstop, and just the situations he's in. And it kicks off with Stephen Merchant's speech at the wedding. It's just so brilliant. Like it's just that's like a perfect encapsulation of what the movie is. Is like if you can watch Stephen Merchant's best man speech and laugh. There's plenty more where that came from because the entire movie is just funny and it is relatable to an extent because it's got that heart where it's, you know, romantic comedies, you root for, you know, the couples to stay together, but maybe in this one, maybe that's not what's right. And I like that it's a different take on a romantic comedy and you actually care about the characters and you care about what's best for them. Maybe not what's best in the sense of the word best, but, it makes sense if you think about it, but don't give me that look. It's just such a funny, funny movie, and I honestly every time I watch it, as many times I've seen it, I still just giggle from beginning to end because every scenario, every line out of Rafe's Ball's mouth, everything Stephen Merchant does is just hilarious.
It was very funny. Probably the way you feel about that movie, I feel about my number one movie. This list that I've put together contains unquestionably a collection of the longest movie titles in Movies on Up list history. My number one, probably the longest movie title that we've ever done on here, directed by Larry Charles, starring Sacha Baron Cohen. It is Borat, Cultural Learnings of America for Make Benefit, Glorious Nation of Kazakhstan. This is one of my favorite comedies of all time. I am not embarrassed to admit it. I'm also not embarrassed to admit that I'm not sure that I have ever seen this movie stone cold sober, but I don't think that it really matters. I would argue that Sacha Baron Cohen is really pretty close to Peter Sellers, who I started the episode talking an awful lot about. They're both tremendously talented character actors. Obviously, I think most people know Sacha Baron Cohen from Borat, from Ali G, but he was very good in Hugo. He's shown up in some other movies where he's not doing the ha-ha, look at me, I'm so
Les
funny.
Les Mis.
Yeah, Les Mis. I'm that the Queen thing.
I'm really mad that he's not going to be in Queen.
Yeah,
I think that introduces the world him to the world in a whole different light.
Like, exactly.
He's
that's
got
such
so
a
much
bummer.
Talent.
But we both think, oh, absolutely, he's the perfect guy to play Freddie Mercury. But that to me, that just shows how talented the guy is. And Peter Sellers was talented in the same way. And I mean, they went about things very differently. I don't think you were going to see Peter Sellers wrestling naked with a giant fat man. Maybe Cohen tried a little bit too hard with Bruno. But I think Borat, so ridiculous from beginning to end. I laugh my ass off just thinking about the movie. From beginning to end, I giggle the whole way through. I love it. And I think that a lot of people maybe don't think of this as a British comedy because it was so successful in America. But guess what, folks? It is. And I really think that the fellas from Monty Python would probably be pretty proud.
To bunch this together with Bruno, like, he took that British sense of humor where there's no limits. There's no – you have the balls to do anything – and then show them on the big screen is pretty much what Bruno did a lot. But
balls. Showed a lot of balls.
Yeah, that's
on
what
the
I
big
meant.
Screen, yes.
To get those released as major releases and actually latch on. Like, yeah, Bruno wasn't as successful, but to get that kind of success in the States says a lot because that's not the kind of stuff that usually picks up here. Because a lot of it, especially Borat specifically, it's a movie of, hey, look how stupid Americans are. But so many Americans were too stupid to realize that that's the point of the movie. So it found its audience.
Look
it was,
at this dumb foreigner.
Yeah.
He's so funny.
Like it was like, you are so stupid that you don't even realize the whole reason this is funny is because you're so stupid. But to have the balls to put that out and to make it work twice. Because, yeah, Bruno worked. Like, it was
sure,
him.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, The Dictator.
Not so much. But those are completely different.
Different
movies.
The
Dictator was scripted.
Yeah.
These
other
two weren't.
For him to come out, and they're very – they didn't even make my radar. I wasn't even – I didn't think of them that way because I guess Yeah, they are. I consider them American movies because that's where they were. But you're right. they just, in my head, like, oh, they were, you know, mainstream American releases, so I didn't even consider them. But, yeah, they're so good. And they do sum up, like, the British sense of humor. Like, they encapsulate a lot of it. My number one, if you've ever heard me talk, it's not just one of my favorite comedies. It's one of my favorite movies ever. It's one of a handful of movies that I consider absolutely perfect. It is Shaun of the Dead from 2004. Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost. They just hit something, and they hit it right. It has everything I love about it. It's got the gags. It's not, I mean, not super heavy on the gags, but they're there. The dialogue is some of the sharpest dialogue I've ever heard. Like, and the callbacks and everything about it. A joke in the third minute comes back in the 70th minute. I love stuff like that. It's so well written. The dialogue is so sharp and bright that there's a reason that it blew up over here, because it's very, yeah, it hits that British sense of humor, but it's also very American mainstream. Like, it had enough about it that it did get picked up, and Simon Pegg's a big star, and Edgar Wright's a big-time director. It's just such a perfect movie because it's not just reliant on the dialogue. It's not just reliant on the zombies or the gags. It's the characters are really, really good. Even David, like, all the characters you care about somewhat, at least. And, like, Sean, you care about whether he gets the girl back or not. And you care about the friendship between him and Nick Frost. And it's one of the most funny movies I've ever seen, and one of the most, I laugh out loud so much through it. But then you have the scene with the mom that's just brutal and heartbreaking and gut-wrenching. And to be able to fit something like that into a movie that's so funny and still make it a competent horror movie, because there's still legitimate horror aspects to it. It took so many good things, and I almost left it off the list because I don't just consider it a comedy. Like, it's just a great movie, but I can't talk about British comedies and not think of this one, because it's top 10 movie ever for me, and I absolutely love it. And Shaun of the Dead, I usually try to leave off obvious ones, but I couldn't this time.
Very rarely do you try and leave off Edgar Wright movies. I'm surprised that there's only one on the list.
Hot Fuzz is in my also-rans.
I figured, but I do love this movie. Obviously, it was the first, really, it was my first exposure to Edgar Wright, to Nick Frost, to Simon Pegg, and they absolutely could not have done a better movie than they did here. And maybe that's, you know, the reason that, and I know you say, you know, it takes a couple times with Hot Fuzz, and I'm sure it does, but pretty much everything they've done after that is, in my head, maybe unfairly, compared to Shaun of the Dead, they were perfect the first time out, and a lot of guys never get to perfect. So it's probably unfair of me to hold them to the standard that they set for themselves. But this is an awesome movie. It's, yeah, maybe calling it a comedy is being narrow-minded, but it is. It's funny. If you want to call it a horror movie,
I think the only
it's
reason,
a horror movie.
I think
fine.
That's the only reason I it's absolutely a comedy, but I feel like that kind of makes it not want to get the credit it deserves, because people look at comedies in a different way. But it's,
some people do, yeah.
I mean, it's a perfect horror movie. It's a perfect comedy. It's a perfect relationship story. It's a perfect friendship movie.
It can fit perfectly, and it, you know, in any of those boxes. If we did our favorite, we've done favorite zombie movies. I'm sure if you left this off, it was just to not be redundant. But if we did a, you know, favorite buddy movie, this could be up there. It's that good of a movie. It can fit and be one of the best in a bunch of different made-up subgenres.
We talked last week about, like, I have memories of Blow. Like, this one, I lived with contest winner Jason West at the time of that. We saw a trailer for this movie, and the trailer was so funny, but yet I don't remember it ever hitting theaters. This was before there were a lot of indie theaters around. I mean, there still aren't that many around here, but I remember I waited for the day the DVD came out, and I had to check three different stores before I found a copy. I went home. I watched it. I loved it immediately. I watched it again. He got home from work. I said, you have to watch this movie with me. And I watched it three times in a row that day. And I still can watch it if it's on, if I, you know, moving and I come across the DVD. Like, it's just something I can watch any time. If it was, you know, we talk about Christmas Story on 24 hours a day on
I'd
Christmas.
Rather this was on 24 hours
if
a
you
day.
Had a network that was just Shaun of the Dead on repeat 24 hours a day, I'd be on there a lot throughout the week, because instead of browsing through the channel, I would just turn it to this.
Instead of finding your DVD, which you could put on,
yeah,
24 hours a day, you would rather watch commercials in my network.
Did you have any also-rans? Because I got quite a few.
I figured I'd really kind of just let you go with the also-rans, because I knew it was going to be tough for you to cut. A lot of the ones that I like have been suggested to me by you, so you're probably going to mention them anyway. So just go ahead. Have at it, wanker.
I mentioned Hot Fuzz because I don't want to have two Edgar Wright ones on there. The one that I had the hardest trouble leaving off, because I think it's a perfect British comedy when you talk about what they do in comedy better than we do, Death at a Funeral, I think definitely needs a mention. And I've talked about it before. That's the only reason I put it above, or I put like Four Lions or Kiki Boots above it. It's that perfect, hey, we're at a funeral, which isn't a setting for comedy, and
shouldn't
it's a
be.
Hilarious yeah. comedy. And, oh, hey, we're finding out terrible things about our dad that we never really knew him. It shouldn't be set up for comedy, but it is, and the cast is amazing in that. Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, maybe not classified so much as just a straight comedy, but it's hilarious.
That Snatch, I mean, I think a lot of the Guy Ritchie movies do have humor in them. I love them.
See, even more so than Snatch, because I think Snatch was more of a crime movie than a comedy. I think Lock, Stock focused more on the comedy. Son of Rambo I had on there. I mentioned The Full Monty. The Inbetweeners, which was a great show that failed. They tried to remake it in America. It failed. The movie version of it in overseas, a fantastic movie. And then one that the director is British, but it takes place not in Britain. So I left off In Bruges. But I think it could very well be considered a British comedy if you want to stretch the rules a little bit.
I guess as long as we're stretching, a lot of Americans in the cast, but A Fish Called Wanda, pretty good too.
That one, yeah, that one popped up a lot. Because when I did actually look up some stuff just to make sure I wasn't missing anything, that one popped up a lot, mostly because of the Python connections. But
yeah, and I mean, I don't like it as much as any of the ones that I have on here.
No.
But it seems like maybe I'm in the minority on that.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a lot. There's some I cut off. Like, I didn't even go into the, you know, stuff like Severance or, like, the horror comedies that I love, because they make fantastic horror,
yeah.
like, Doghouse. Stuff like that. So, I didn't
no
even...
No Wallace and Gromit?
No, it's not for me.
Sure.
It would make a lot of people's list, I think. But,
I like them.
Yeah. But, yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot. If we did miss any, I tried to be thorough, but I'm sure we missed some. Hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, Twitter @moviesonup. Find us on iTunes, leave us a review. Find us on Stitcher, listen to us there, or find our RSS feed. You can find all of that right from our website. I try to put any way possible to listen to us up on the website. Also, just thanks for listening. I actually met somebody that listened to a few weeks ago, and it was pretty cool. So
meet and greet.
Yeah. So nice. It was actually pretty cool. So we appreciate you listening, because
did you get pulled over by a Canfield policeman?
Yeah, no. Sometimes it feels like we do this just for ourselves. So any reminder that there is at least one other person out there makes it worth it. So we'll be back next week with a fantastic episode. We have a really cool episode lined up next week. Maybe. Well, we got to plan it out.
Probably. No, we got it.
Okay.
It's our top 5 Kevin Costner movies.
Oh, yeah. Kevin Costner movies.
Yeah.
That is next week. I thought you vetoed that. So, yeah, next week for draft day, the story of the Cleveland Browns, we will we'll be talking Kevin Costner movies.
We'll draft our top 5
Kevin Costner
movies. Kevin Costner prospects.
So until then.
Keep it up.